It's 7 o'clock. Welcome to the City Council meeting for the City of Shore Acres. It's Monday, July 24th, 2017. 1.0, call to order, roll call.
Alderman Jennings.
Present.
Alderman Fallon. Mayor Pro Tem Bowles.
Present.
Mayor Sanford.
Present.
Alderwoman Ramos.
Present.
Alderman Hoskins. Present. We have a quorum.
The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Moving on to 3.0, the presentations, there are none. We're going to move on to 4.0, council reports and requests. 4.0, Mayor Sanford, items of community interest. I do not have any. 4.2, city manager advisor committee report and recommendations. Do you want to take on that?
Well,
you're on the city manager.
We're going to have that as part of a discussion here anyway.
Do you want to move past it and just go on? Is that okay with everyone? Since we're going to discuss it later on, that we just move past it. Okay, so we're going to move on to 5.0, public hearing and public comment. 5.1, public comment. This is the opportunity for the public to address council or comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are to be directed to the city council and dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law from participating in discussion or deliberation of items not specifically identified on this agenda. 6.0, administrative report. 6.1, city manager's report. Mr. Stahl?
Public comments.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going fast, you guys. Okay, so we're going to start over on this end in the back. Do y'all have anything? Is there anybody here? Get your name and address for the record.
I'm still Neil Moyer, and I'm still at 1118 North Country Club Drive. I'd like to see if I can provide a little background on item 7.2. I know the city manager has twice in the past given some background in this area, but it'd be difficult for most people to find those discussions since we don't have any written minutes. And I don't know how one would scan the meeting recordings and find that out. In any case, the palm trees, which seem to be the subject of this item, predate the city of Shore Acres. They are in the right-of-way of Shore Acres Boulevard, which is a county road, including the right-of-way. It seems to me before the city gives any consideration of spending scarce city resources, then consider consulting with Precinct 2 of Harris County, the commissioner who lives as resident of Shore Acres, to consider having the county pick up the costs for these palm trees and their removal, which, like I said, predates the city of Shore Acres. Shore Acres wasn't responsible for planting them. And as I said, these trees are in the right-of-way of essentially Harris County. So a little bit of time and effort on the part of the city consulting with the Harris County Commissioner and taking a look at the budget that the Commissioner controls for Precinct 2, it would seem to me that would be a far more cost-effective approach than having the city just willy-nilly go out and start dealing with these palm trees and the possible secondary consequences that could occur because of removing it. There's possibly city infrastructure, water lines, possibly sewer lines that could be impacted by the removal of those that would affect the costs. Both of the removal of the palm trees and obviously cost to the city. Should there have to be any rehabilitative efforts on those city assets? So I would strongly recommend that the council not take any action committing scarce city revenues to this action until after the consultation with the precinct two commissioner. Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
Nikki Schnell, 618 Baywood.
First of all, I just want to make a broad statement to all the council, all elected officials, that it's been quite disappointing some of the decisions that have been made as of late. And I would encourage everyone to leave their egos at home, stop shooting messengers, and make decisions that are in the best interest of the city. Second of all, the 7.5 texting and driving. I was on council then when Richard, well, former Alderman Adams put this up over 6 years ago. We were one of the first 10 cities in the state of Texas to say I'm texting my driver. So we were kind of a trendsetter, well above our time or before our time. And for the city to overturn that in its entirety because the state is now going to say no texting and driving statewide, that doesn't even take effect until September 1st. And there's further discussion actually going on about that during the special session right now. And it's just, it seems like it's idiotic. It's a true step backwards. So for right now, you're telling everybody it's okay to text and drive. And I know that, you know, we have, he's not here this evening, but we do have a public safety officer on council that voted to get rid of texting while driving. And, you know, that is the number two, I believe it is, or number one cause of automobile accidents. It falls under distracted driving. Number two is speeding, or reckless driving, and number three is drunk driving. So, and I can't find anywhere where any city has gone back and absolutely repealed a texting and driving rule. So that is not something I think we need to be noted for. Now, some municipalities have gone in and tweaked theirs to change fines and that kind of thing. And that's okay. Sometimes things need tweaking because times change. But to sit there and repeal it in its entirety is definitely to the detriment of the safety of the citizens. And if you're going to do it, you need to get out there and take the stupid signs down. We still have no texting signs. We need big signs that say, it's okay here, guys. So, also, as far as item 7.6 as to the discussion of infrastructure, you know, on multiple occasions, we've had people come here and talk to us. We know that we've got a water tower issue. That's definitely something that's going to need to be addressed. But we also are not required by law, because of our size, to have overhead storage. We can do a ground system. And overhead storage, you know, contrary to what a lot of people think, you're not getting your water from the water tower per se. That's for emergency because it's gravity fed. So it's a lot less expensive to do ground storage rather than overhead, aka water tower. 7.9, the discussion about the recommendations for the city manager and the report from the advisory committee. They made some really good recommendations as far as credentials, requirements, et cetera. It is my hope that council, when they do make the decision for the city manager, once Mr. Saul, or before he leaves, hopefully that would make more sense, that they do follow those guidelines. Educational requirements, to me that's important. When it came to, you know, city administrator, we certainly did not follow what was in the job description requirement as far as education. It said a bachelor's required, master's preferred. We did not even get an associate's degree. Fifth, the discussion about next door. I know that there were a few people on council here when I was that were championing allowing the police department to use next door as a tool to communicate with the citizens. I think it works well when it works. But Alderman Hoskins did bring up make everyone aware that there is not a good records retention policy with Nextdoor. Whereas like the BDS does have that. It very much so. It has to be on file with the State of Texas Library. So look before you leave, folks. And finally, item 7.12, the city code, changes to the city code. I know that the primary objective and the reason for that is to change verbiage, you know, just in housekeeping from city administrator to city manager. But I would ask council to really look closely at some of the changes. Yes, there are being changes made where the city manager will be responsible rather than the mayor, but there's a lot of changes where it says and council. And that's all I have. As much as I'd like to stay and watch the sun, my neighbors are locked out of their house. Y'all have a good evening.
Bye.
I'm David Tidworth, 308 Sunrise Drive. I just want to ask, Chuck and I came up and talked to David a couple times about just regarding to the shoulders at the pier. We've had pier key days, so we got some dollars in the budget. And we're looking to repair a parking lot. And Rick and I chatted about it, so we had been discussing with Dave a little bit about to make if we get our shoulders worked on there so we can get rid of our, it's a falls under street repair. And so we may have some bucks in that budget perhaps. We've got to look into it before we move on with we'll working on the parking lot. I'm not just look into getting the shoulders repaired. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Anybody else on this
side? Yep. I'm Dana, 331 West Q. Miller. I just wanted to say about the social media thing, the next door, and it can be used, you know, as far as it being used, I mean, I've seen it be used well, but there's also, you know, certain groups that are private for other people that can't get on there and also comment. So if it's going to be used, it's got to be used for everybody to see.
Anybody else?
I got some.
Okay.
In order to point it, you know, what I have not on the agenda, but it is something that's near and dear to my heart, and it's the trash service. Decker said they were looking at, when we decided to go with them, getting a claw truck. I lost a tree about 2 months ago, and it took them up until the last time we had trash to finally pick it up. Now, what fell in that? 4th of July. So we missed a trash day. So we had a lot of trash when they picked up after 4th of July. So whenever I talked to Decker, they were like, well, they'll pick up what they can, provided they have room. Everything is cut and sized and bundled and whatever. It's been so much easier and less strain on my back if they had the little claw thing. I'm not saying let's not stay with Decker. I'm saying we need to bring him back and ask him what's the status of getting this claw thing. If he's not getting the claw thing, we need to go to someone else or look at going to someone else. And we need to have them come out to pick up just tree debris. At least I know that somebody was talking on next door about a green up, clean up, whatever. That needs to be done at least once, twice a year. We are in a wooded area. Having said that, something that is on the agenda. Next door, as much as I love the sleepy little community, we are in 2017. You've got to keep up with the ages. Some things we can stay back in the Stone Age with. I'm fine with that. Small community, love that. I don't want to get big. I want to stay small. You want to reach out and touch someone, get on social media. The whole going out and talking to your neighbor, you're talking to groups now. You send, like with Chief Harrison, he's not in a group. He's on next door, period. He posts, if you're in general, which if you're on next door, you're in general, everybody sees it. The whole BBS, great idea, except for you have to log in to the internet. Next door's on my phone. BBS isn't on my phone. I don't look at it every day. And then whenever I could look at it, it's entertaining. I'm laughing at it. It's a joke. Next door? You want to put a message out? You want to put a message out? Hey, Shore Acres, we're going to have a city council meeting, blah, blah, blah. Great. Perfect. Now I know that there's a city council meeting unless I drive down the boulevard. Chief Harrison has a missing kid. Guess what? Oh, hey, look, there's that missing kid. There's a missing dog. Oh, hey, look, there's that missing dog. It's instant. An email? I don't check my emails. And I've got 4 or 5 different email accounts. I don't check any of them. You send me an email, I'm probably not going to read it for a month. Nextdoor is a good tool, but it's not the only tool in the toolbox. Think about that before you decide no social media. Thanks.
But please with the trash.
Anybody else? Okay, we're going to move on to 6.1 administrator's report, city manager's report. Mr. Shaw?
Good evening. Glad to report that
Debbie Nesbitt has returned from a week of intensive workforce training provided by the state, and I think it was well worth her time and our time to have her away. And that's all I'm going to have for the report tonight. I'm going to move on to other business. I don't want to start talking.
So you don't want the 6.2 monthly financial report?
Oh, yes. I want
okay.
That.
There you go. 6.2 monthly financial report.
That's part of the other topic. In your packet is the financial report, the monthly. I just want to hit a couple of the high points. The general fund checking balance. About to make transfers out of that. We completed the quarter into our investment, but the balance today is $420,313.69. So if I got a financial guy, then I'm still obligated to say it's fully collateralized. In our utility fund, I've got $125,934.62. And in service deposits, which isn't our money we're holding for our customers, is $58,196.96. We have $22,481.77 in Block Ramp. That now has been closed out. And this month in July, that will transfer by the end of the month to the general fund. That is our money that is not part of the grant. In the tax pool, our investment pool, our balance is $412,088.45. It looks like in July we'll break $300 of interest in a month. It's been a long time since we've seen much way of interest. We have four certificates of deposit, which we never touch, and the maturity value on that is $250,281.42. And this month we have one that's maturing over $60,000. The interest rate that it was at the last term was 0.5%. That was a retail CD that was purchased quite some time ago. That will be closed out, and we will buy a government CD. We'll move to the government finance division, and we will be purchasing a 48-month CD as part of our laddering plan. And that will be at a whopping interest rate of 1.17%, which is a large improvement, moving in the right direction. The property taxes collected to date is $846,049. And in addition to that, we have collected the year to date, this year to the end of the calendar month, June, $11,765 in penalty and interest. That's the financial report.
Okay, moving on to, does anybody have any questions for Mr. Stone? No. We're going to move on to 7.0 business, 7.1 discussion of lot clearing. I put this on the agenda because there's been a lot of complaints about the lot clearing or about overgrown lots not being maintained or enforced throughout the city. Mr. Stone, what are you doing for that? Did you send a letter to everybody on the lots?
We have lots that have been improved that require the level of maintenance. The police department, the police chief presently is sending those notices out to people because an unimproved lot has never been developed. Those lots remain that way. That's been the position the city that council had taken in the past when it leave a little wild. I have a list from the chief that I received today of the grass and weed complaints that he enforcement action he's taken so far this year. This was requested by Alderman Jennings, and I just got it a few minutes ago, and it's on its way to not only Mr. Jennings, but I'll circulate that to the rest of the council so you see the action we're taking.
But we haven't sent out any letters yet notifying anybody that's in violation of that?
Oh, yes.
We have? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I wanted to find out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that they necessarily respond.
Right. What about the one on Country Club? You said that one's going up for auction. That's been a nuisance over there to those residents for
several years. Yeah, it's 1005 or 1007 South Country Club. That was a foreclosure, and it was auctioned, and then it was sold again. And then that company apparently went into bankruptcy. It now is a tax foreclosure on it. It's being sold at auction on August 1st, so about a week away. On Tuesday, that'll be on the auction block. Providing it's not redeemed before then. There's been a lot of interest in it. I expect it to sell. The new owners will be required to clear the lot and to secure the building and to fence the pool. that's behind it. The previous owners have been cited for that, and we have arrest warrants for the current owner that is lost in the tax sale. So we'll do what we can, but I think that the new owners will be responsible to do those things. I don't believe you'll see anything done with the building for 6 months. They wait out a redemption period where the person who had it, lost it in the tax foreclosure, could come back and take it.
Is there a 6 month redemption period or a 3 year redemption period? I thought if you bought something at a tax sale, they had up to so many years to pay it back with interest
the threshold for the new buyer to lose any improvement that they make that's not required by the city is 6 months.
Is it because that's taxes, or I mean, how does that work?
That's really not my area.
Okay. Right.
But I have visited with several people that are bidding on it. They're responsible bidders, some of which own other properties in the city.
Is our city attorney one of those bidders?
No.
Okay. Is there anybody else that has anything to say or input or any questions? Okay, we're going to move on to 7.2, consideration and approval resolution number 2017-272, authorizing the city manager to obtain services for the removal of dead palm trees from the city street right away. I put this on. I wanted to have a little bit of discussion before we go into the resolution, since we passed along the discussion. There was a guy that was across the street from me that had some palm trees removed, and he did a good job. He got the trees down. He what's that called when they go in and they stump grinded it, and then they hauled the tree off. And so I asked him while he was out there how much he would charge, and he said $400 a tree. So when I contacted Mr. Stahl, he said that's basically a phenomenal deal that he didn't want to pass up if that was something that we could do. It wouldn't cost, I think, like maybe $10,000 or something to have them all removed.
Actually, it'd be more than that.
About how much? You told me like 20 trees plus a couple more, so I'm looking at $400.
The number of trees has grown to a little over 30 now. Mm-hmm. We prioritize that. You had asked for a $10,000 amount. I think that I've identified funding would be about $12,000 available.
Okay.
$400. The trees that I had talked to that owner, Mr. Atkins, about, those trees have not been cut down or removed yet. Ones are actually in the tree right away.
No, they have. They're all cut down.
Well, Judy talked to me about today. I went and looked at there.
Who's Mr. Is that the guy across the street from me?
On the corner of Detroit and Circle.
Wrong guy. I think, okay, when you sent the email saying that somebody cut down some palm trees without permission, I think I was confused because I thought that was the guy that you gave permission to cut palm trees down, and that's whenever I asked them how much it would cost to remove the palm trees. That was the resident, not the guy that you're talking about right now. So I guess I got them really mixed up. I didn't realize it was two. So we had those cut down without permission, and then you gave permission for the guy on the corner, Atkins, to cut those down?
Correct.
So how many, that should, there was three you said on the corner?
Two that are on the city right away and one that's on the property.
Okay, and I think that there was two that was on the city right away, so that's minus four.
The three that were cut down today are on Shady Lawn.
No, they were cut down when I contacted you. They're the ones directly across the street from me. You know which ones I'm talking about? Right across the street from me?
No, I guess that's
okay, all right. Well, that's when I contacted you, that's what we were just...
Mr. Atkins had sent me a request, and that's what I have. He had sent photographs of the actual trees, so I...
Okay, yeah, I think we're talking about two different residents. Okay, but that's why this is on here, because Mr. Stahl had said that he thought that was a great deal, and I wanted to get some input from council on what they thought. But there's also legislative that just passed the trees where you can cut down, but that's if they came after you bought the property, right?
Yeah, that is to prevent the city from stopping a developer from removing trees. Doesn't impact what we do on our street right away.
Okay. So is there anybody else that have any questions?
Do we have a motion, a resolution, anything going on?
No, we do. Do you guys, I wanted to discuss it before I did that. So I'll go ahead and do, so we have consideration and approval of resolution number 2017-272 authorizing the city manager to obtain services for the removal of dead palm trees for the city street right away. Do we have a motion?
I think we should debate it. I move that we approve resolution 2017-272 to remove dead palm trees from City Street right away. I mean, if that's a good price, we should take a look at it.
Do we have a second?
I'm going to second it, even though I'm going to vote against it. But yeah, with Mr. Hawkins, I just want to talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve resolution number 2017-273 brought by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman Jennings. Jennings, we'll start with you.
Alderman Hoskins has the floor.
Thank you. Thank you. Actually, I have more of a question for, I'd like to hear Mr. Stoll's opinion on the pricing of it. Is this really something that you would recommend that we do? I mean, we do need to get rid of our dead palm trees and something that they look hideous.
Right. Well, let me back into that. We have a large number of dead palm trees. There was a period of time which we thought that they were going to be diseased trees, and out of all of those 28 trees at that time that were tested by the state lab at A&M, by A&M, only two turned out to be diseased, and they did not believe that the others, so it was not a spread issue. At the time that we believed the trees were diseased, the cost of removing the trees was in the neighborhood of $7,000 each because of the procedure the state would require under quarantine conditions. We're not there. Our typical contract, when we go out for quotes for removing trees of that size, a diameter weight, has been running us from $1,000 to $1,200 per tree for removal. That's the tree gone. The representation that the mayor's made is that there is a contractor who is willing to cut down and remove a tree, and additionally, apparently, stump grind for $400 a tree, which is an outstanding price. And if we had the opportunity and we had the funding to remove at least the highest priority, which are those trees that are the largest danger, for $400 a piece, I think it would be well advised to do that.
Do we have the money? Is the money in our budget?
The money that I have was asked to look for funding for $10,000 to do this. And what I have tagged is our tree maintenance line item, using a very broad interpretation of tree maintenance, which includes drainage and obstacles and items that are in the street right away. Clearly, all of those are street trees. Mr. Moyer brings up a good point that right of way is county right of way, but we certainly do some street maintenance on the county right of way. When we tear up one of their trees, we fix that. So the funding that I've identified here, which is also subject to discussion here, is to use street maintenance. So we have about $12,000 available in that fund. This resolution is authorization. It's not an obligation. It doesn't award a contract. But if a contractor comes back and says, oh, I misunderstood, it'll be $900 a tree or $800 a tree, then we can take a pass. On the other hand, if he says, yeah, for $400, as long as I can do 10 of them or 20 of them, I'll do it. And I can go find where he's done work, because I was really waiting for those three trees, and apparently I have the wrong three. If they're down and it's done properly, then I think it would be.
But
well,
is the county road, I'm sorry.
I think Mr. Moyer's suggestion to
right.
checking with county first would be mm-hmm. a really wonderful idea.
The county is only up to, is it Sunrise, or is it up to Broadway? That's the county road.
No, the county road goes all the way. It goes from West Country Club, 300 feet this side of West Country Club, to Shore Acre Circle.
Okay. So I guess we'll start with down at this end with Mr. Jennings, Alderman Jennings.
Yeah, Mr. Moyer is exactly correct, and I just Mr. Saul just said something about a broad definition. I would say it's very broad, and I would say it's incorrect in this case. I rarely disagree with Mr. Saul, but let me read you the thing that we actually voted on, the actual ordinance that we voted on. It says the reauthorization of the local sales and use tax in the city of Shore Acres at the rate of 0.25% to continue providing revenue and maintenance and repair of municipal streets. Clearly, this is not a municipal street. That, by the way, that passed 3-22-39, so clearly. And that funding is funding that we were targeting at the end of this budget session, maybe the beginning of next budget session, to work on Baywood, towards the yacht club. We really need to work on Baywood. That street needs to be repaired. And as Mr. Tidwell said earlier, we have some problems with the curb down on Shore Acre Circle going around by the parking lot for the Rec Association. So that's the funding that I believe we should use that funding for that and not for beautification of the city, and particularly since it's not on city property. So, like I said, I did second that, but I will be voting against it.
Alderman Bowles?
On your estimate, have you talked to a contractor, Mr. Stahl? Have you spoke with this tree company?
This particular one? No, I have not.
When they're cutting it down, they're going to be required to haul it off as well, correct?
Right.
So, no written estimate?
Pardon?
No written estimate given to the city?
Not at this point.
Okay.
And again, this resolution doesn't even bind us to a particular vendor.
Right.
Right.
If somebody else pops up, they'll get $400.
Well, too, and like Moyer said, I think the public should reach out to the county. I would rather see if they will remove them for free than spend any of our funds. But if they won't, I can get you the estimate from the company that was hired for some people across the street.
And this does not foreclose on approaching the county first year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm totally with Neil on this one. I think we need to do a little more research, and I do know that the street that Jennings is referring to is horrible. I mean, it'll eat your car alive, so I really think we need to get our streets fixed before we pull the trees. And I understand the importance of, you know, making Shore Acres look beautiful, but at the same time, if, you know, everybody's complaining of the road versus a tree that's just standing there. So.
And I think we also voted, when we voted on those taxes, it was to spend the money on the street. So I'm not necessarily in agreement with pulling it from there.
Mr. Wilson?
Well, I think, let me just respond. I think their first choice should be going to the county, without a doubt. And I think that's an excellent recommendation. Let's do that first, and let's revisit this resolution, and if we fail at the county level.
Okay. So, even so, he has the authority to suspend up the tank grant.
Well, we can, I think the county's the first place to start.
Right.
So, as far as the, I don't think we need to pass this tonight.
Okay, so all those, we're going to vote. All those in favor? All those against?
Aye.
Okay, we're moving on to 7.3, discussion of extending Healthy Texas Housing Trust funds for fill dirt to achieve drainage. We have about a little bit over $2,000. We don't have the numbers on me right now. A little over $2,000 left in our trust budget. And we have a resident that has, she needs fill dirt. We can't pay to have it, we can pay to have it dumped. We have the money to have the dirt dumped, and then she'll have to fill, apparently, underneath her house, up on stilts, and the complete diameter of her house is, there's a hole underneath there. It's kind of like a pond. It's about 12 inches deep, and like I said, it's as wide and as long as her home. So I don't really need council's approval, but I wanted to at least put it on the agenda and discuss it with you guys and see if you guys are okay with that.
I would agree that you don't need council's approval, but it needs to go to the city first and stuff, just like the other, you know, three bids, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Right, we've gotten more than three bids. I just wanted to keep you all apprised of what's going on. So does anybody else have any comments on that?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do we have any confidence that it will get spread?
That she'll do it herself. I don't know. You know, I know that. Am I allowed to ask somebody in the audience a question?
Sure.
Okay, David. Did David Harris already get the backhoe to come and tear up the roadway to fix the water line for the Pier Association? He did. Okay. Because somebody had brought that up that said maybe he would be willing to move the dirt, and I told her to ask them because I don't really talk to them that much, but I just wanted to see if that.
Somebody else has an answer here.
Okay.
I do have access to a tractor with a box blade and a blade on the front, more than likely be willing to do that.
You would?
We do have Little League football that starts in the start, so that ties us up 6 days a week for a couple of weeks. I can find time to make that happen if it'll help somebody in the city.
Yeah, it will, and I appreciate that. I'll let them know. Okay, so.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Have you gone out yet and assessed how much dirt they need? Dead?
No.
Okay.
I think there's an engineer report, and she's also an engineer. And
Mr. Stahl still has to get final say because he's the floodplain manager here, so we have to make sure that we follow all the regulations.
Right, I've been in communication with him with that, and that's my problem. Right. Is there anybody else? Okay, moving on to 7.5, consideration and action to adopt ordinance number 2018-270 to prohibit texting or web browsing while operating on a vehicle. Do we have a motion?
Well, we can have discussion about a motion. We changed our rules.
You want to start?
I'll start. I just want to say that I too have looked. I can't find a single city in the United States that went from no texting to allowing texting. Not one. We're probably going to be, we are the first, and we've already done that. I've looked hard for it, can't find it. One of the advantages that this does give is that if somebody's driving down the street and they're obviously texting, that gives our police force a reason to stop them. And the more reasons they have to stop a vehicle that's driving through the city, doing something obviously irresponsible, we need that kind of protection. I'm not really worried about the person that's texting and driving. I'm worried about the person that's walking down the street. They're walking their children, and they're just careless. It is the number one reason for car crashes in America is distracted drivers, and texting is a large part of it. If we're only going to have this ordinance here until September 1st or whenever the legislature does, so be it. But until then, we need something in place. So I'm going to make the motion that we approve ordinance 2017-270, banning text messaging in this city while driving. I've heard people complain about, you know, not being able to see around the corner because of overgrown vegetation.
You made the
That's
motion.
Not nearly as second. Important.
He said the floor.
He made the motion.
He still has the floor. He's talking. We're allowed a discussion. You guys.
I said I was going to make the motion. I didn't do it. So anyway, you know, we want safety in this city. We have small roads. Texting is. I think it's very important that we do not allow it. So I move that we approve ordinance 217-270, prohibiting the use of wireless communication devices to view, send, or compose electronic messages while operating a motor vehicle.
Do you have a second? And I still have a second. 7.6, discussion of the options available on Associated Press. Process required to obtain funds necessary to make significant improvements to city infrastructure. Jennings.
Yeah, I think when I talked to David about this, we might have gotten our things crossed about what we needed on here. But basically, we are going to need some infrastructure improvements to our water, sewer, streets. In some cases, we mentioned Baywood, there may be one or two more. The city buildings, you guys, I don't know if you've been over to the shop over there. So we're going to have some parks even. We're going to have to spend some money, but... And I appreciate that the bond guys are here, and they're going to talk about that next, and that's fine. But we need to not put the cart before the horse, and we need to figure out what we need before we decide how much we're going to spend, obviously. And again, that's the bond guys are here for a different purpose. So we're not voting on anything tonight. But what I did feedback from, we did put a committee into place for the city manager search, and I'd like to do something similar. You know, if council wants that, you know, we can do that on the next agenda if council thinks it's a good idea. Do something similar. We have a lot of engineers in this city, and not only engineers, but people that work in the field and practical people that, you know, and so you need a mix of that stuff. And so put some sort of committee together for that, and I think Alderman Snell said something. That we've talked about before, we may not need a water tower. A ground pressurized system may work for us as well. And so we need to do something to come together to put that together and do it comprehensive this time. It's not just piecemeal stuff. Right now we're looking at another $340,000 or so to go under 146 to repair that sewer line. You know, that's a lot of money for coming straight out of the budget. So we just need to do it in a comprehensive fashion. So that's my thought on that.
Anybody else?
Yay, nay, whatever. But we can put it on the agenda next time if anybody wants to.
Does anybody else
say
anything bold?
Nope.
Okay.
Madam Mayor?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, we do have a bond attorney and a financial advisor here this evening that's prepared to tell counsel what the process is and what the steps would be.
Okay.
It might be advantageous to have that information. They've taken their time to be here.
What's your
name? Joe Morrow is the financial advisor, and then backing him up here is Clay Holland, who is playing the role of Tom Sage, who is the bond counsel that I've been working with.
Okay, you want to hear information?
Sure. This I put together. We have this in benefits. Cities have very limited ways in which they are authorized to borrow money. And two of the most common manners in which a city will borrow money would be certificates of obligation or general obligation bonds. With a certificate of obligation, it has a very similar credit to a general obligation bond. The difference between the two primarily is how you achieve the authorization to the council to issue those. And a general obligation bond requires an election, which may take place twice a year, in November and in May. A certificate of obligation, you may get authorization by going through a publication process where you give the public your notice of intent to issue, publish it in the paper, and from the first day of publication till you take action, you must have 30 days elapse, and the citizens can come and say, have an election by presenting a petition to the city, and then you must have an election. And Clay can elaborate on all of the legal steps behind that. But the two obligations are very similar from our standpoint when you get in to market it to end buyers. And that's kind of what I put together here is what kind of impact would a debt obligation have on the city, because you have limited ways in which you can repay that obligation. You can do it with ad valorem taxes. You can do it with revenue from your water and sewer system. Those are the primary means by which you're able to repay a debt. And we started with $2 million, then $3 million, $4 million, and $5 million, just to give you a sense of what kind of financial impact that will have. Because in a lot of municipalities that we work with, the list of needs is this long, but the affordability is much shorter. So it requires the prioritization. And you all need to come up with your list of projects and then prioritize them on what you believe is the affordability for your community. The first page that I put together, 2 of 5, I guess. The cover page to the letter has all of the assumptions that we use, right? And the big caveat at the bottom is we don't know what the market's going to be by the time you get around to issue them. We know that the Federal Reserve is talking about raising interest rates. We don't think they're going to do it this week because when they meet for 2 days, they did it in June. Most economists feel that the next time we get a rate hike, it's going to be December. So usually they do quarter end, but they don't have to. They can do it at any of their monthly meetings. So the next time we see a rate increase is probably going to be December, based on what the economists are predicting.
How did you come up with a 3.95%?
I looked at triple B rated paper, which is investment grade, and bank qualified, which a bank qualification is for issuers that sell less than $10 million in a calendar year. Okay, and then I added 25 basis points to what the average rate for a 20-year obligation would be. So, you know, you'd basically be looking at a rate of 370 in the market today. Add the 25, that's where I got to the 395.
And why the 20-year term?
20-year term is pretty much a standard term. We typically are looking to match your asset life value with the term of the loan, and it would depend on what you came up with and said, well, we want to finance these. We typically would look through that and say, well, this should be a shorter maturity than that. But that's basically what we did. 20 years is pretty standard, and just not knowing what your list of specific projects would be. That's
yeah, because I've got a water tower 50, 60 years, something like that.
Yeah, statutory limit is 40 years.
40, okay.
So it's adjustable. 20 years is adjustable depending on the asset's lifetime expectancy. Is that correct?
That's correct. You do get into marketability issues. We don't see many small issues go out 30 years at $2 million in bond land is small.
Okay. Yeah, right. It is very small, but very large.
And very large.
Because on $2 million, it says the annual payment is $146,000. I mean, that's a lot of money for a small city like us. That's just that's almost true. $2 million. And if you're saying 20 years and the water tower is good for at least 40.
And the term then, and how we sell it, that's something else that would be a matter of discussion, because you've got the state of Texas that will buy your bonds through a state agency called the Texas Water Development Board. And they offer a number of different funds. In fact, one of the ways that the state of Texas disperses EPA grant money is through the Water Development Board. And they do that by aggregating the federal funds with state money, and they have what they call revolving funds, where they subsidize the interest rate. So you get market rates, like in this case, a 370 less 120. So you go 370 to 350 to 250. And that's how they distribute federal money, is by subsidizing the interest rates. Now, there are catches with that. When you deal with federal money, there are rules, additional rules you have to follow. So your engineering costs go up and things of that nature. Project slows down a little bit, but it still is a lower cost method than if you access the markets on your own.
Now, the legal part of this, what kind of time frame are we looking at?
Well, if you go the certificate of obligation route, again, Joe mentioned that requires a 30-day publication. And so if you publish the notice, wait 30 days, then you can authorize the sale of the bonds at that point and move forward with the projects. The election, general obligation election route, again, there are November and May elections. In order to do it this year, you'd have to call the election. The window to call it would be August 9th to August 21st. And then you'd have the election in November, November 7th. And then once the election, if it passes, you have to wait the 30-day litigation election challenge period. And then you'd be ready to eligible to issue the bonds in December, January.
So if we were going to have an election this year, we would have to move really, really fast. And that's probably not going to happen.
Probably not. Could we do it in May?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. We can do it in November, too, if we call special meetings and really...
It costs money for an election, too, though.
Right. So the certificate of obligation route is designed to allow cities to avoid the time and expense of an election unless the public requests it through by petition.
But what about the election to set up a separate... I mean, this is from the Ed Warren Act, is a separate... debt tax, make dominoes, a separate tax.
That would happen automatically, essentially, with the issuance of the debt. You covenant when you approve the bonds or the certificates of obligation to levy a tax for the debt service on these, and then you'd have to set a rate to collect that, the necessary.
And then if it doesn't pass the bond election, how long before we can come back and visit it?
Good question. You could revisit it by another election the next cycle immediately. A new law as of 2015 that if you bond proposition fails, you can't then turn around and do certificates of obligation for 3 years for that same project.
Do we even know what project? I mean, we don't even know how much money we need.
Correct.
What the cost is going to be.
Which is what I said earlier. We need to do the car reports and all that.
Right. So and then we have infrastructure issues.
We have a possibility, and we are eligible for bonds. And, you know, we just need to figure out what we need to do.
And then we got to figure out if our credit rating allows it. If we've got the finances to be able to support it, correct?
You're thinking our triple B, you're thinking?
Triple B category, yes. And if you go to the Water Development Board, the state agency, you don't need to go and get a credit rating. All municipalities in the state are welcome.
But then there's a lot of red tape, is that correct? And a lot of reporting requirements?
It's federal money's involved, so yes, there's a little extra.
Davis-Bacon wage requirements for federal projects. Things like that.
Archaeological studies for the state.
We have a cap on what we can tax, correct?
Correct. I mean, your total cap is $1.50. The Attorney General will allow you to show coverage of your debt with $1 of that amount.
Engineering costs, past projects, we can roll that in. So let's say you've got about $300,000 worth of projects that we've done. We go before, do all this, we can roll that back in, put it in our tax pool.
There are some
within tax requirements, right?
Within federal tax requirements, you have to have adopted a reimbursement resolution within 60 days of the expenditure. And then the look back period is you have to reimburse yourself within the later of 18 months of the expenditure or the date the project is placed in service, mm-hmm. not to exceed 3 years.
I think we need to probably, I understand that there's an issue with the water tower. Everybody wants a water tower. I don't know if a water tower is required. We have major infrastructure issues. We have daily infrastructure throughout the city. I think we just kind of need to prioritize what is a necessity and what's not.
And kind of to that mix of projects, you know, we mentioned the water development, but that would only apply for the water and sewer related projects. You know, if we're talking about city buildings and streets, those would go to the market and not have that subsidized interest rate. That's another consideration in GO bonds versus certificates of obligation, is that for general obligation bonds in the election, you have to vote each project separately, whereas for certificates of obligation, it's all issued pursuant to a single notice. So everything's rolled together.
Which is cheaper on cost of issuance.
Okay. And even though you have borrowing capacity, the capacity to issue whatever amount, you don't automatically issue that amount? Or do you?
You don't have to use it.
No, you don't have to use. Say you did an election for 4.5, but you decided you only needed 3.25. You only issue what you need. But you don't go and issue at all. And then decide later you don't need it.
You get it as you need it, and as the projects come up, you pay for them like that.
You decide what you're going to do when you issue that
amount. Okay.
There are accompanying tax limitations on this with the speed with which you need to spend the funds. So you would say, okay, over the next 18 months to 3 years, we need this amount. We'll issue that up front and use it as you need it. For that time window.
So would you describe that like a line of credit, basically?
Yeah, that's what
so we don't
like.
Issue a single bond until we said, okay, we need $100,000 now, so we issue that amount, or do we? We're going to get all the money at once?
You're going to get all the money at once. You're going to aggregate all the projects that you need within the next 3 years, for instance. And you'll issue that at one time. That will be the most efficient method of doing it because you'll only incur one bond issuance cost,
okay.
And then those funds will sit in the construction fund, and you'll use them as the projects demand.
So we need to be real careful about our projects, make sure that it's examined.
Yeah, that's what we want to do, and it's we need to prioritize everything. Do you mind if I open it up to the citizens and see if they have any questions for y'all? Does anybody here have any questions for him?
Okay, so the two types of bonds, which is more commonly used by municipalities?
The bulk of them are general obligation bonds that are quoted. Certificates of obligation are very common, though, for especially for water and sewer projects and other things that are basically vital. The judgment is often that these are just mandatory services and we need to get it done, and we need to get it done quickly.
And I'll take a separate view on that, because I primarily work with cities only. School districts have no choice. It's a voted general obligation bond. Cities can do GOs or COs. In 25 years, I only work with a couple cities that on a regular basis issue general obligation voted bonds. Most everybody else, when they come to market, they can use certificates of obligation. And that's just
certificate of obligation. We do not have to go to vote. That can be taken through council. Vote and handle that way, correct? A bond you have to do a general election for.
That's correct.
Okay.
I think at the last statewide election, maybe the one before that, the Water Development Board was granted access to a considerable sum of money.
SWIFT program.
And I'm under the impression that a lot of big pigs have already gone to the trough seeking that. People wanting to build dams, water reservoirs, God knows what. And ours, even if we only did water storage, whether it be a tower or something else, would probably fall into the noise of slop that the pigs are throwing out of the trough. And I guess my question is what's the line like for the Water Development Board?
And the Water Development Board has a number of different funds, and the SWIFT program was the State Water Infrastructure Fund that they voted a couple billion for. And yeah, that is for developing surface water sources throughout the state of Texas. The program is
conservation projects and a number of other things too.
And the programs that we would be looking for, the two revolving funds are drinking water and clean water state revolving funds. Those people come in every year, they solicit money, they are not short on money. There's also what they call a development fund, which is state money, which doesn't have the federal regs attached to it, but it's a higher interest rate.
So I thought I heard you say that the state Water Development Board is using, my recollection is, clean water grant money to buy down interest rates. And it's that process, essentially, that brings the federal requirements, because you're using federal clean water grant program monies to buy down the interest rate, as opposed to using the clean water grant money probably the way in other states was originally intended, and that is to match funds with an entity, be it a municipality or the state, to build the wastewater treatment plants, a number of other things, as opposed to buying down interest rates.
Revolving funds are common across states, especially populated states. That's the way that most states have chosen to administer those EPA grant monies. There's the two funds, state revolving fund. So drinking water is for drinking water. Clean water is the wastewater fund. You separate your projects up. Outtake because they have different federal regs you have to qualify for. And so those are the two programs that get the discounted rate. And there is a competition for the money. but it isn't to the point where they're turning people away. So if you apply, you're going to get the money. They do have a process where if you're poor, you can get some grant money, you won't make it, so it doesn't matter where in the year you go and apply. Y'all would not qualify for any grant money.
But because those are federal funds, you take on obligations that the EPA has set.
You must meet federal requirements.
And yes. That essentially becomes additional cost burden on essentially what the city might you want to do. These other requirements would be mandatory, and they would have additional incremental costs just to buy down the interest rate of using the federal funds.
You increase the cost of issuance and construction costs, but significantly reduce the interest cost.
Right. But you've got these other obligations.
How much lower
to Jeff is satisfied?
1.2.
I had a question. While I was looking into grants for infrastructure, a lot of them required to have a city plan. Are you required to have a city plan to have these grants that he's talking about?
You have to have a drought contingency plan. A lot of cities already have that. You need to have a certain structure to your rates, which is an escalating fee, so that the more water I use, the higher my rate goes, as a way to encourage conservation.
How long is the grant process when we start doing it? When we review that, how long does it take to get a grant?
Well, to get through the Water Development Board process is probably maybe 90 to 120 days before you're ready to issue.
But I think that board requires us to have a city plan.
I've never
read that.
That would be on the engineering side.
Yeah. So I remember last year talking to somebody from there, and they do have funding, but there's some requirements that we have to meet.
And they encourage people who are considering them to have a meeting with them to discuss the possible projects and see if it's a match.
Okay. Is there anybody else that has any questions? No? Well, thank you all for coming. Thank you for your time.
Thanks,
guys. Moving on to 7.7, consideration approval resolution number 27-3, authorizing the city manager to retain the services of bond counsel and financial advisor for the purpose of advising city council, assisting city staff in preparing documents related to the offer and issuance of municipal debt instruments necessary to accomplish city infrastructure improvement.
Move to consider and approve resolution 217-273, authorizing the city manager to retain the services of bond counsel and a financial advisor for the purpose of advising city council, advising city staff, and preparing documents related to the offer and issuance of municipal debt instruments necessary to accomplish city infrastructure improvements.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve resolution number 2017-273 brought by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman Bowles. No discussion?
Mr. Schultz, do you have anything you want to add to this? Is that your agenda?
Yeah, I would just say that regardless of the route that we go or how we prioritize engineering projects, we're going to need the services of bond counsel and a financial advisor that's required. And this just keeps us on that fast track as we do the other things. It's, we have typically there are 1 year agreement with contract renewal and the opportunity for us to close the deal, get out of that terminate the agreement. So a year's run gets us into what we're doing here.
How much is that?
It is a contingency agreement, so it's paid on the proceeds of the issuance of the debt.
And so if we decide we don't want to do that right now, then we don't owe anything.
If you don't come up with a list of projects for them to do work on, then we won't have any debt.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to have discussion. I guess we'll start with Jennings.
I don't have any.
Bowles?
I don't.
Almost? No. Hoskins?
It does. I'm good.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve resolution 2017-273 brought by Hoskins, seconded by Bowles. All those in favor?
Aye.
7.8, discussion and action to approve the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the desired skills, attributes, and qualifications to fill the position. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brought by Hoskins.
That goes to me. actually, we have two of the members of that advisory committee here tonight. In the our agenda packet is the work product from that committee. You've all had a chance to review it. The whole purpose of this agenda item is to just for council to formally receive this document and to approve the recommendations that the committee made, and answer any questions either from me or from the committee members.
We
want to use that word, but they're giving the recommendations. We receive it. That's okay. Unless there's questions or changes that need to be made. I mean, it is almost that way. So I'm just asking for council's approval regarding the recommendations on behalf of the City Manager Advisory Committee.
Are you making a motion?
Well, I can make a formal motion. I move that this council approve the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the desired skills, attributes, and qualifications for a successful candidate to fill that position.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion brought by Hoskins, seconded by Rombas, to approve the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and time frame for hiring a new City Manager. Do we have discussion?
I'll go first. I think the committee did a very thorough job. I'd like to thank all of my committee members as well. But I'm guessing other council members may have questions. So.
Okay, we'll start with Jenny.
I'd like to ask the other two members that are here, either Ms. Bowles or Mr. Bordy-Loki, what did you think of the process?
Well, I thought it was very informative, and it gave us a much better idea of what the scope of the duties of the city manager encompass, and it gives you a greater appreciation for the job that Mr. Stahl does, because there's a lot that doesn't meet the eye. So I thought it was very, very educational, very informative, and I think it's a good thing that came together.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it was a good process. We learned a lot. Mr. Stahl came and sat with us one evening, and we interviewed him pretty intensely and got a sense of kind of what he does for a living and what that might look like for the next person as well. And so that was very helpful. And I was going to make a comment that if the committee receives our report, I mean, or the council, I presume they can modify it or do anything different. I mean, they're not bound by what we recommend. I mean, you can do whatever you want.
No, that's very good. Thank you. I'm going to try to put some more work on you here in a little bit.
I don't have anything. I just want to say thank y'all. Looks good. Very thorough.
Yeah, it does look really good. All
right. No, I'm good.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and timeframe for hiring a new City Manager, all those in favor?
Aye.
And it passes. Moving on to 7.10, discussion of the use of Nextdoor social
network.
7.9.
7.9.
Discussion and action to approve the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and timeframe for hiring a new City Manager. We just did that one. Okay, we missed on 7.8, discussion and action check for recommendations.
No, 7.9 is the time frame.
This is the time frame. Regarding the process schedule.
Oh, okay, So discussion and action check for the recommendations from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and time frame for hiring a new City Manager.
Okay, I put this one on here because the committee had put this together in terms of the time frame, and I wanted to include it in the packet for council to actually go through and maybe use as a schedule. And that's what it's there for. So it's just a recommendation to approve this as a recommendation, as part of our charter for the committee. So I move that we approve the recommendation from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and time frame for hiring a new City Manager.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion brought by Hopkins, seconded by Gold, to approve a recommendation from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and time frame for hiring a new City Manager. Do we want discussion?
Yes.
Okay,
I don't know how to do this because we don't really have anything here, but I need to, I guess, make a motion to amend the timeline here.
We don't really, can we make a motion to amend on a recommendation? I think we probably need a resolution.
We're just accepting the recommendation. We don't necessarily have to follow it. This is what the committee came up with. If there are changes that need to be made, it's not ironclad at all. We can change it. It's just a starting point.
But I would just like to say if we need to change it, instead of making a motion to change it, we need to change it.
Can we make a motion without a resolution?
Well, yes, we can.
To review candidate applications and identify candidates for interview. I guess when I wrote the original resolution for the committee, it wasn't as clear as I hoped it was, because if you go back and listen to the meeting that night, the intent was that the committee would also serve as a screening process for those resumes to narrow it from, if there's 50 of them come in, that the committee narrow it to five so the council could concentrate on whatever those three or four or five were, versus, and I don't see a need for the city staff to get involved in this process.
That was actually a question that came up at our last meeting, and we went back to the original resolution. The original resolution effectively asked specifically for the recommendations. But I think everybody on the committee felt that there would be more work going forward with us for the committee to do. But at this point, we've completed everything that was in that resolution. So the next step is for example, where you want the committee to go through and review the candidate applications. We expected it to be that, but it wasn't explicit in the resolution.
So we need to amend the resolution.
We'll do that at our next council meeting.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay. Meanwhile, we can go ahead and get the advertisements posted and know that you will have more work to do.
Okay, and we figured that.
I have just a simple question. Maybe it's for the attorney. This committee is supposed to be advisory in nature only, and if they're weeding through the applicants and have control over who they're submitting to us to be hired, I don't believe that it's advisory.
We can debate that at the next meeting.
So we're not going to amend this recommendation because we don't have a resolution. We're going to wait until the next meeting, right? And you're going to put a resolution?
All we're doing is accepting.
Okay.
Thank you, committee, for giving us the recommendation. That's it.
Okay. So we have an approval for the recommendation from the City Manager Advisory Committee regarding the search process and time frame for hiring a new city manager. The motion was brought by Hopkins, seconded by Bowles.
We still have some discussion.
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Stahl, on the advertised position, 7:31, is that a good date? Just to get it out there, where are you going to advertise?
Well, if we're going to use the qualifications that are here and craft something that fits within them, and that's going to be the only. There's no additional input to that.
Mm-hmm.
31st, we can get on with it or before.
Where will we post this?
It will be placed with ICMA and with TCMA, which are both professional organizations of city management.
Mm-hmm.
I would also put it in the Association of Public Administrators, which is an allied group that's a little broader than the applicants that you might get.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, so we have the motion to approve the recommendation. I don't even know how we can do a motion. We don't have a resolution. So we approve it.
Accept it.
Okay, there we go.
Accept the recommendation. That's it.
So it's been accepted. We're going to move on.
Somebody doesn't want to accept it.
That's what I'm saying. I think everybody's fine.
Everybody's happy. We can move on.
Okay. So 7.10, discussion of the use of Nextdoor social network by city officials.
I make a motion to remove 7.10, discussion of the use of Nextdoor social network by city officials, off of the agenda.
Okay. I don't You don't need an open motion. We can just take it off of there.
No, we need a motion.
We don't have a discussion. You can't make a motion unless you have a resolution.
Right there. Got to do it. Anything to be removed from the agenda has to be done by a majority. So I'll make a motion.
Okay.
We have a second.
You have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion brought by Alderman Bowles and by Ramos to remove item 7.10 from the agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Passes. 7.11, consideration approval resolution number 2017-267, establishing a processing fee of 5% for payments made by credit cards to the Shorecrest Municipal Court for fees, fines, court costs, and Shorecrest Building Department for permit and inspection fees. Other payments as authorized by local government code section 132.003 and authorizing the collection of such fee. It's brought by Stahl. Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve, to consider and approve resolution 217-267. Establishing a processing fee of 5% for payments made by credit card to Shoreacres Municipal Court for fines, fees, court costs, and Shoreacres Building Department for permit and inspection fees, and other payments as authorized by local government code section 132.003, and authorizing the collection of such fee.
Do we have a second?
Second.
So we have a motion brought by Hoskins, seconded by Jennings, to approve resolution number 2017-267. Do we want discussion?
This seems pretty standard. We're just going to let them pay by credit card. We currently have a resolution that adopts the 5% fee for municipal court, and it said add other city charges. This explicitly includes building department specifically, so that we're covered in using the credit card and collecting that fee. I discovered that we were using the credit card for another general fund, but there was staff misunderstanding that they couldn't collect the 5% fee because it was not adopted by the resolution. So this closes that gap and we'll stop losing 5% on those things that we take a credit card for. The thing that's significant to me is new construction plans, permits, you know, those are often over $1,000 for new home construction, and 5% is real money.
$50.
So this helps close that gap. That's all it does. It doesn't really make any other big changes.
Okay, I'm going to start with Jennings.
Good.
Bowles?
No.
Thank you. Ron? Yes. Hoskins? Okay, we're going to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Moving on to 7.2, consideration and action to adopt ordinance number 2017-271, amending the city code section 2-112, working hours section 2-113, attendance and punctuality section 2-114, overtime work section 2-116, wages and salaries section 2-119, sick leave section 2-120, holidays section 2-123, leave of absence, and section 2-124, administrative leave. This was put on by Mr. Stahl. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion to consider and adopt ordinance number 2017-271, amending the city code, section 2-12, working hours, section 2-113, attendance and punctuality, section 2-114, overtime work, section 2-116, wages and salaries, section 2-119, sick leave, section 2-120, holidays, section 2-123, leave of absence, and section 2-124, administrative leave.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion to adopt ordinance number 2017-271 brought by Alderman Bowles, seconded by Hoskins. You have it, Bowles.
Mr. Stahl.
Yeah, if I could walk you through this quickly. Former Councilwoman Schnell had it backwards. The primary focus of this is a couple specific things, and then the language changes are just housekeeping. One significant change, though, that's related to that is the work hours being adjusted by the city manager. Previously, there wasn't even an accommodation for city administrator to adjust work hours. That's a necessary thing. The next item is the work hours, the normal duty hours. This will shift public works hours a little later in the day and make it where all the employees are here Monday through Friday at the same time. With only three and a half employees, I'm not sure that we're getting full value having split hours where we have only one on for some period of time, 2 hours a day, and this will close that gap. On administrative employees, there was an issue that I have here that was making it very difficult to avoid overtime. We had hours that were in the city code, 7:30 to 5:30 p.m. We've not been following those hours, 7:30 to 5:30 by practice, having gone to a 30-minute lunch from a one-hour lunch. And so this addresses that in closing those hours up. Here are a couple things that happen. In the code, it says what the duty hours are. And we've always construed that to include what the lobby hours of the office open hours are. And that's not one and the same. Those are two different things. And by having had a 5 p.m. closure, we have two cash drawers to balance, which means that we've got two different employees responsible for two different cash drawers that are balancing those drawers after the end of the day. And so 15 minutes doesn't sound like a lot, but 15 minutes is 2 hours per employee per week that we were building in built-in overtime, which I don't want to pay. So what this does is it moves the hours to 5:15. We'll close the door at 5 o'clock as usual, and then we will allow 15 minutes for those employees to balance their drawers, close their day out, and not generate any overtime. The other thing is the switch from one-hour lunch to half-hour lunch. We've reduced the staff size in City Hall. When I started here, we had 5 people in City Hall, and we've now got down to 3 people in City Hall. And the difference there is that we basically have 2 people at windows to cover. With a one-hour lunch, that's 2 hours a day with only 1 person on the phones and the windows. With a 30-minute lunch, it reduces that down to an hour. So this is also done in concert with visiting with those employees and what works, what they think will work, and this then will move us from a one-hour to a half-hour lunch. So the open lobby hours of these changes will be from 8 to 5 Monday through Thursday and from 8:30 to noon on Friday. So it's a very small shift on how it impacts the public, our citizens, and our customers, but it will allow us to contain overtime. The next item I would jump you forward to, that's not just housekeeping, is in wages and salaries. It drops the merit pay. Council removed the ordinance that provided for merit pay and left this particular definition in here, and so it just strikes that. Otherwise, they're largely housekeeping changes until you get to holidays. Holidays is another thing that was causing me some fiscal heartburn. We have 11 holidays that are paid holidays. The city code says, and we have been following, that you're paid 8 hours pay for a holiday. However, my issue is in being fair not only to the employee but to the city, and that is paying 8 hours for a four-hour day. Any holiday that falls on a Friday is a four-hour work day. Any holiday that falls on a Saturday by city code, you have the Friday off, which is a four-hour work day, and we're paying 8 hours. So at the end of the year, when I'm tallying up the hours and trying to figure out why we've spent more money than I think we should have per employee, so we're paying more than the 2,080 hours in aggregate for those employees by the number of Fridays that we have a holiday. So what this says is that you're paid the same number of hours as would have been work hours if it were not a holiday. And I think that's reasonable and that's fair.
And that's for hourly. Who's all salary in there?
We only have 3 employees that are exempt employees, and that is the chief and I and public works director.
Okay.
They're ineligible for overtime. That change I did not highlight, but one of the things that was previously is this, the city code here basically declared that all the employees were non-exempt, in which case we would owe overtime pay to the 3 of us. And so this also makes that correction in the overtime exemption by identifying that there are exempt employees in addition to non-exempt employees.
Does anybody else have anything? Sorry, Jenny?
I would just say that as far as working hours go, I don't know why we're doing this. It seems to be something that should be under the supervisor's control. The only thing we need to know is when the lobby's open. Yeah. The hours for the lobby. But I'm not going to waste any more time with amendments or anything. I just don't think it should, you know. I don't know why I've done that.
Paul?
I don't have anything.
I'm good. Austin?
Oh, just thank you for the explanation.
Okay. We're going to vote on Alderman Burr's motion to adopt ordinance 2017-271, seconded by Hoskins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those against? It passes. I didn't hear Jimmy.
Aye.
Okay. And it passes. If we have no more business, we will adjourn at 8:25.